Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
The Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 342. I did that backwards. That one was genuine, too. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jectrill, Ballins, happy March Madness. The tournament is here, folks. Happy tournament. If you like college basketball, if you don't, then I'm sorry. The Price is Right's not going to air live on Friday and Monday. Actually, it will. No, excuse me. The Young and the Restless is not going to air live on Friday and Monday. So apologies.
Or just go through the whole thing and watch some Impractical Jokers. You'll be set regardless.
That's the biggest thing. The back of the week. Who's back of the week? This is a bit that one of our fellow pods does.
No, it's original.
Impractical Jokers. They're always back. But if you don't watch Impractical Jokers after that last true TV game of the day during the tournament, you didn't actually watch the tournament. If you don't see who tonight's biggest loser is after the last game wraps, you're a liar. Before we get into it today, Trill, have you looked at a bracket?
I have.
Have you filled out a bracket?
I have filled out a bracket. I have. Enough. I think my final four, my championship game in my bracket that I filled out is Michigan and Houston. I have Michigan winning. I don't know Michigan, why Houston. I like Michigan. I feel like Michigan's due. I feel like Michigan is due.
That's very 80s and 90s nostalgia, that bracket.
And I want Kelvin Sampson to be vindicated because
you want him back at Indiana.
I would take him back at Indiana in a heartbeat. I really would. And honestly, looking at it through the lens of history, he got a raw deal out of that. Well, all he did pretty much before smartphones really took off is he started texting before everyone else did. You're telling me that wasn't a feature you could build into the NCAA football games subsequently?
He texted too early. He found technology too soon, basically, is what happened.
Yeah. And meanwhile, like IU basically got their program destroyed because he was an innovator and just had that Nokia sidekick and was just flinging text off to potential recruits. I don't know.
Or it's going to be Brad Stevens.
Fingers crossed for you. This is a big week for the Trill Ballins fam.
With the problem with the Brad Stevens thing is like that. I mean, Brad Stevens isn't the kind of guy who's going to leave Boston unless he gets fired. Like, well, during the season, I should say. So, like, IU is going to have to offer him a whole lot of money. They will offer him a whole lot of money. It could happen. It probably won't happen, but I'm saying it could happen. It's a possibility. Before, like, this year, I would have said it was not a possibility, but there's something about a single Indiana University booster paying $10 million to Archie Miller to get out of town. That makes me feel like the program is taking this rather seriously at this point.
It was Jesse Eisenberg. He's the one who paid out Miller that entire paycheck. He's a big week though. You got not only do you have Brad Stevens to IU talk, but you also have a certain personality of yours has come back into the limelight in Chris Gaines.
Chris Gaines is back?
Oh, you didn't hear?
Did you send something to the group?
No, I just assumed you would have seen somewhere. Chris Gaines is back.
All right. You know,
just give it a search. You'll see it. You'll see Chris Gaines. He decided Garth Brooks. He's like, I'm bringing Chris Gaines back into the limelight because everyone's been begging for it, I guess.
What is old is new. Remember Garth Brooks just came out for the inauguration in blue jeans and just kind of did a song and then just like left through the doors.
Dude, you got to love that about him. He did this. Didn't he do a bunch of like COVID shows or something for CBS?
I remember he did a, I mean, there was a show pre-COVID.
Was it Facebook?
That was a, I'm sure he does stuff. I mean, Garth Brooks is a legend. But the last major Garth Brooks thing I can remember is the Notre Dame concert that I think aired on NBC.
One of your last tweets on the Trombones account was about.
Yeah.
Your that's still the brand.
Personality, yeah.
Yeah. I don't care.
Chris Gaines, but he's back, dude. The Chris Gaines.
What's old is new. I think we're going to... Honestly, I sent you that picture. I was just like went down a memory wormhole of all the tech gadgets I had in 1999 or 2000. And I sent you the picture of that Philips MP3 CD player, which you burned the MP3 files directly onto the CD so you could play your MP3s on a CD format and allowed you to get a whopping like 100 songs on a disc. I really hope like the whole like 1999 aesthetic comes back where like everything is like liquid metallic for some reason.
Yeah.
It's just like
the smoky gray liquid metallic. Yeah.
Yeah. Smoky gray liquid metallic. You know, the 1999 MTV Movie Awards should, probably the Music Awards should be like the barometer for design moving forward. Cause I think that one was like themed after a disaster or something. I don't really remember it all too well, but they had like a little ticker on the podium. That was the peak of, that like that weird 3-year period between like 99 and 2002 before everybody was like, this shit's garbage. Everything looks like this futuristic vision sucks.
They had those, they were big into chrome, I feel like, in that sort of early 2000s-ish era. Like the Oakley sunglasses, the overhead ones that look so cool.
They look Chronicles of Riddick like sunglasses.
Yeah. Hold on, I gotta close
my door. My dogs are fighting again. I gotta close my door.
I can't even hear him. But yeah, no, those chrome overhead glasses were so goddamn cool. I never wanted anything so bad when I was a kid. I was like, no, trust me. I understand it looks cool on like Edge or whatever, but it's going to look just as cool on me. I swear to God. Miss that era of everything being metallic and steel. They love that too. Just like steel graphic design. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, it was the whole spaceship aesthetic where the future was, you know, we were on the cusp of Y2K, so everything had this real like futuristic type twinge to it. And I gotta say that's better than all like the brands now, which all use like mint green for their logo now. And all the brands have the same font. It's like this serif font. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
And I'm sure some advertisers use it, but they're all using it. It's a nice looking font. I'm sure they went through the research and found
Most logos are Helvetica New.
Yeah. Everyone's moved away from Helvetica New into like this sort of new, slightly more, maybe it's just condensed Helvetica New. I don't really know.
Yeah, because for a while it was Helvetica New. I literally just watched the documentary on it, basically.
That's what I was going to say. Everyone watched that one documentary on Helvetica and decided that Helvetica was the move for a while. And there was the Futura wave that Nike, like when Nike was, I mean, Nike's always been popular, but I feel like, you remember like the Futura shirts, the Nike shirts all had the same Nike Futura font on it. Nice. I feel like that was popular for a while. But like with the... I'm talking like going back to the 1999 aesthetic. Like I'm just talking some real effed up fonts there. Like I don't know what was popular in 1999. Like maybe the typewriter font, like in metallic, with like a lens flare off of it.
And the digital typewriter font, that one too. You know what I was watching? Because I found it on Paramount Plus. Celebrity Deathmatch. Remember that?
Celebrity Deathmatch is incredible. That's one of those things that was so entrenched in that era.
Yeah, that could not escape the mid 2000s. I think the matches I watched were Paris Hilton versus Nicole Richie and Bam Margera versus Tony Hawk, and Don Vito made her
the heyday. If that was earlier than that,
yeah, exactly. I know, that's what I'm saying. You just like that. I was surprised it even hit like the Bam Margera era of the mid 2000s.
It was YouTube before YouTube. I mean, that's YouTube content. It's, you know, not. I mean, it was like, I guess it was kind of funny at the time. Like, one of the hallmarks of that era were like actively disliking boy bands in like pop acts.
Yeah.
Because you either sided with Eminem or you sided with Limp Bizkit, which were themselves like pop institutions in some sort of way. And by the way, like, I like both of them, but you know, they were at the same award shows as the Backstreet Boys. So it wasn't like they weren't part of the same musical scene at the time. And you could develop like a whole personality on like the AOL forums around like how much you hate boy bands and stuff. Like, oh, and that kind of continued with like Justin Bieber, I think. But now it's like, it's gone back like full circle, maybe not full circle, but like 180, where like being a BTS stan is actually kind of cool, I think. Because I watched the Grammy. I watched the Grammy, the singular Grammy. I watched singular. One Grammy. BTS killed it. They're like, I'm always so impressed by BTS and just how their choreography is done and how precise they are and how charismatic they are. And I don't know.
You want to hear the first fight in celebrity deathmatch history, not counting the pilot? It was Hillary Clinton versus Monica Lewinsky, then Mariah Carey versus Jim Carrey, and then Tim Allen versus Seinfeld, just in the battle to the death, and then the Gallagher brothers against each other. It's just incredible going through the fight matches in here. Oh wow, we were just talking about Woody Allen. Woody Allen has one of these.
Okay, first off, like,
nah, you see, when you say that, now we have to add context.
You can't just say the context of like we were just talking about
how we were watching the documentary before we started the show.
That's the context, because I don't want people to think the wrong things about how we were talking about Woody Allen. You're just talking about the documentary.
Apparently, both Woody Allen and Suni Previn appear in the fourth episode of Celebrity Deathmatch, and they kill Spike Lee and Quentin Tarantino.
Because those were the three directors that existed in the late 90s, all three of them.
This is incredible, just going through this match list. Oh, Garth Brooks is in the sixth episode versus Marilyn Manson. Incredible.
They better have done him right.
No way Garth Brooks won that. Like, that was back. I mean, you think about like MTV.
No, they killed him. Marilyn Manson won.
Yeah, that would have been. Garth Brooks would win now if they were to redo Celebrity Deathmatch. Garth Brooks would win any matchup now because everybody can appreciate Garth Brooks. But there was a time in the late 90s where like any music that didn't fit in like the specific nu metal genre was like not cool.
It was as Garth Brooks's brain falls out after Marilyn Manson blows the top of his head off with his guitar. All three members of Hanson are sliced to pieces by a chainsaw held by Zach Hanson.
That's all they had to do, was just lampoon a pop act that you were too cool to like. And that was the entire show.
Puff Daddy versus Trent Reznor in the eighth matchup. Wow.
Did Trent Reznor win that?
Hasselhoff versus John Tesh in the next one, which, by the way, I'm going to immediately have to go back and watch Hasselhoff versus John Tesh. Let's see. Trent Reznor is sliced to bits by vinyl records thrown by Puff Daddy. Puff Daddy is sliced to bits by Trent Reznor's projectile 9-inch nails, which are literal fingernails.
The show writes itself.
Literally, yeah. And then they had a couples matchup of Bruce Willis and Demi Moore versus Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. Wow.
Wow. That's a very, very aged couples matchup. Yes. Like, multiple relationships removed from the current state of affairs.
Yeah, that's the most dated out of all these ones I've seen here. Wow. All right, we got to move on from Celebrity Deathmatch.
I'm sorry, Jeff, but the Paramount stuff is going to bring back, like, I think, an interest in the old MTV programming. But
it didn't bring back enough, though. That's the problem.
It's not going to be enough to offset the ridiculousness viewership. Like, the calculus doesn't work. Like, even though people might care about Beavis and Butthead a little bit again, like, that's still not going to draw more viewers if MTV were to go in their back catalog and play, like, I mean, the MTV has a catalog of, like, some of the best documentation of pop culture from that point in time. Like they own the rights to that. It just doesn't get played. And that's look, I'm the old guy bitching about MTV. It makes sense for them to air Ridiculous. I'm not saying like don't make sense, but the hope was, I think, like people go into the Paramount stuff, find the MTV shows, there'd be rejuvenated interest. It's not enough to beat out the, you know, 6 million people that tune into Ridiculousness for 14 hours a day.
I like that point though, because it is almost like an incomplete documentary, just going through and watching all those old MTV things. It's like all the raw materials of a documentary of pop culture in the early 2000s. Well, of all really the last like 20 or 30, 40 years. But like specifically for me, knowing I can go back and watch like something like Celebrity Deathmatch or whatever I was watching before, like Next in Parental Control, and just kind of, you know, it feels like that. It feels like you're getting a glimpse into the past as to what people thought.
Yeah, you just get your puka shell necklace guy named Slice on the Parental Control show, like wearing you know, two Lacoste polos with the collars popped, and it's like, I'm here to get down.
Being like, hey, my girlfriend's dad is a bitch and I hate him. It's like they literally say those things in that show. It's incredible. It's the most staged thing ever. I love that. All right, then, now we can move on.
Then it goes to advertising, the ads for the Sony Vaio MP3 stick player that like five people bought.
Or the iPod Nano stick, the pregnancy stick. I love that one.
Gotta get the fucking show Room Raiders on there, though.
Yes.
And all the seasons of things. That's the lack of seasons is fucking irritating. That made me rather angry.
It's like samples. Like they gave us samples of everything. I don't want, right. We're not fucking Costco, bro. I want the bulk.
Yeah, like that again. Like I you know, man, I don't know. I paid for your streaming service. Like you promise all these MTV and Nickelodeon, like get them on there then. It's yours. Put them up there. Mm-hmm. Tonight we have the movie Chaos Walking. Yes, that's a theaters movie. Sucked. We also interviewed Joe Manganiello. And then we're gonna do a bracket. Trill bracket.
Bracket. Yeah, I'm putting it together now. It's the best things about March Madness.
Okay.
Just have a little discussion.
Okay.
Actually, I'm going to leave the last two open, and I'm going to have you guys fill in that matchup.
Okay. I like that. We're also going to talk Justice League, maybe for a minute. You know, we have a full full review of that on Sunday. Mm-hmm. This episode brought to you in part by Roman. That's right. Most guys have tried different ways to last longer in bed, but thinking about Archie Miller still coaching Indiana doesn't always work, folks.
They sent us something, too. Don't forget.
They did send us something. That's right. I'm going to queue it up and get ready.
Let me read this ad first. Yeah.
Get through the ad, then. They did send something. Actually, it's in the copy here. They said, hey, remember to play the thing. Roman swipes, clinically proven way to last longer in bed, folks. You don't need anything else to think about. They're effective, easy to use, and fast-acting, but don't require a prescription. Roman can ship swipes to you in discreet, unmarked packaging. And each swipes packet is small enough to hide in your wallet for whenever you need it. Super easy to use. Just take the swipes out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry, and you're good to go. That is it. Go to GetRoman.com/lights, and you can get your first month of swipes for just $5 when you choose a monthly plan. That's GetRoman.com/lights. All right, I guess we'll fire it up.
Yeah, they were nice enough to send us over Garth Brooks' newest persona. He decided to do a little bit of a combo, a little mashup with another guy, Tory Lanez. So good, welcome to Chris Lanez.
Okay, here's a little.
Oh man.
Oh no. Here is Gaines and Lanez, Chris Lanez. Thank you to Roman.
Branching out.
The new Chris Gaines. Something else.
Put that Chris Gaines back in the fucking CD bin. Jesus.
It's a six disc changer in the back of my Isuzu Trooper.
That was a great car, the Isuzu Trooper. Yeah. Not actually a good car, but...
Yeah, if you like to roll over going 35 miles an hour.
I made a 25-mile-an-hour turn, just crushed.
Kendek, did you watch Falcon and the Winter Soldier?
The show?
Yeah.
Did they send us the screeners?
Yeah, they did.
Oh,
they did.
Fuck. No, I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't love it. That's my initial reaction. I didn't love it.
How many episodes did you get?
Just one. I thought it was cool, and I'm excited for where it's going to go, but I thought it was a little... I'm going to watch it again, but it was just paced very weird. I didn't feel engaged with it at all. It was odd. I like what they're setting up, but yeah, I don't know. I didn't love it. I like where they're going.
Oh, shit.
But I can't lie. I was definitely disappointed. I did not like it. So I'm going to watch it again, though. I did watch it incredibly late last night. Like 3 o'clock in the morning. So I'm going to watch it with a clear head. But yeah, I think my initial reaction, I was like, damn, I don't think I like that all that much.
It's the people you know.
Yeah, it is. I'll tell you what, it is. Every time you watch those, you're like, damn, those are our guys and gals,
mm-hmm.
The Avengers folks. So I'm going to watch it again. But yeah, I think my initial reaction was I didn't love it. Justice League, though. Justice League, we liked quite a bit. Let's save really what we have to say. But Trill, did you see our scores by chance?
No.
I gave it an 82, Kenjack a 77.
Really? You liked it that much?
Yeah, but there's something in it that I am dying to talk about something. Because there's one thing that absolutely swings the movie in a certain direction. I cannot wait to talk about it.
Was it Batman saying the F word?
He does say it. He has a very, very... Nice, there is a scene where he's very clear. He just goes, oh, fuck.
We'll talk about it Sunday, though.
He talks like somebody on Reddit in 2012. He's like, fucking shit waffle.
Shit waffle douche nozzle.
Douche nozzle. Douche nozzle shit bitch. Epic win.
And then other than that, it's got a 77% of Rotten Tomatoes, 56 on Metacritic. We'll talk about Justice League on Sunday.
Oh, fuck. The Rotten Tomatoes score is the same as mine?
Yeah,
I almost want to change it now. I don't want that.
It's not, but the percentage isn't the same as the fucking score. Who cares?
That's yeah, true.
We got a big math guy over here.
We do get that often, and I do, it is one of my favorite things. Look at these guys with the same scores again. They're always within two of each other. It's almost like we have the same taste.
Yeah, we do have the same taste on most movies. Although I think we're going to differ a bit on Chaos Walking. We'll see.
Interesting. Interesting. People do ask all the time what our biggest difference in scores are, and I think in terms of movies that everyone knows, you are much higher on Doom. I'm much higher on Romeo. I think Romeo and Juliet is the biggest difference.
Those are definitely the big two. Those two and Christmas Chronicles. They have a big difference there.
Happy Death Day doesn't count either. That one's like... That's
a bit thing.
I think we're far off on Starship Troopers as well. Like,
I don't think we're like out of the same stratosphere, were we? Not in the same way.
I'll pull it up at the end of the show. Oscar nominations. Not a crazy amount to talk about. Some cool milestones. We saw for the first time ever two women nominated in the same year for Best Director from Chloe Zhao and Emerald Fennell, Promising Young Woman and Chloe Zhao, Nomadland. Also, Thomas Vinterberg nominated for another round for Best Director. Yeah. That was my biggest cheer of the morning. I was fired up about that.
Very pleasant surprise. That, and I think Sound of Metal getting 6 nominations was a surprise. I thought that was awesome. Mm. But no Delroy Lindo is such a fucking travesty, dude. Such a travesty, especially when, like, Sacha Baron Cohen gets a Best Supporting Actor nod. What the fuck is that? Like, what did Sacha Baron Cohen
bring? Let's note, that's for Trial of Chicago 7.
Yeah, for Trial of Chicago 7, not for Borat 2. But what did he bring to Trial of Chicago 7 that Delroy Lindo didn't bring 1,000 times heavier to The Five Bloods? Whenever you want to think about the respective movies, like... I think that Delroy Lindo had maybe the out of, regardless of category, the best individual acting performance of the year. So it's fucking crazy to me that he's not getting award love this year, but it's whatever at this point.
Yeah, I really didn't like that Sacha Baron. Like, I thought Sacha Baron Cohen did a fine job in the Trial of Chicago 7. But overall, like, I feel like Trial of the Chicago 7, even from like a best picture category, is one of the weaker nominations I can remember. And keep in mind, I can only remember like 2 years. So
In terms of snubs, maybe for best picture, I still think, I mean, the only nominated, I still think Soul probably should have slipped in there compared to a couple of these other ones. Defy Bloods was nominated. Some people say One Night in Miami. One Night in Miami for me, like, I don't think that's a snub at all.
No.
But that's opinion. So, you know, it is what it is. Minari, I will say early, if you're into predictions and stuff like that, I'm not going to use terminology to get myself in trouble here. But if you're into finding the winner of the best picture, this year's Parasite is likely Minari. And has not, I know it's not only the South Korea connection, but this year's Parasite, the Walt Hickey, who does an incredible job of Oscar predictions and analytics online, look him up. We've talked about him on the show. He's helped me out with some blogs and some predictions. We helped us crush last year saying that Bong Joon-ho and Parasite, those were the picks, hammer those predictions. He says right out of the gate, thinks Minari is the one to look at in terms of the We Have the Votes, where the Academy now this year is likely for Best Picture much stronger to the newer Academy than the older. So look at Minari, even though Nomadland right now is the favorite. Also, Judas and the Black Messiah, a lot of acting nominations, had a lot more love with the Oscars, like almost non-existent at the Globes. I know Daniel Kaluuya won, but it was almost non-existent at the Globes compared to what it is at the Oscars. So I think if you're looking for two dark horses, Minari and Judas and the Black Messiah. Otherwise, there wasn't a ton of crazy things.
People were, I think, a little confused about the double supporting actor nomination for Kaluuya and Stanfield, but that's an Academy thing. Like, they can essentially
The studio never offered up the leading roles. They offered up just two supporting roles.
Yeah, so, well, WB, the way they, at least I saw it on their For Your Consideration thing, they were essentially promoting it as it was going to be Stanfield lead, which makes sense, and Kaluuya supporting, but then the way the Academy works is, like, they can essentially filter the performance under whatever they want. So it's an industry award. They can choose whatever the fuck they want. I still think it makes no sense, because Stanfield is very clearly the lead in the movie, and Kaluuya is very clearly the supporting role. So it doesn't make sense to me, but again, industry award, they can do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, it's, again, I like seeing how many nominations that movie got. It was not nominated at the Globes really for much at all. It did pick up a win, but it got snubbed in a way where some people were like, maybe the Oscars, the Globes is not an indicator, but they're like, maybe the Oscars won't either. But obviously it's picking up steam, and the Oscars, the Oscars did do that.
Glenn Close got a nomination for Hillbilly Elegy, and then also got a Razzie in the same year.
One of the few times it's ever happened.
Talk about that. He's got to be, like, for the same role. It's got to be, like, one of the only times it's ever happened.
I think, I think Robbie had confirmed this with me. We thought originally it was the first time it had ever happened. I think it's like the second or third. But it is definitely one of the most notable times. I'll say that for sure.
Also, from Minari, we mentioned Yeon Yu Jung is the first ever South Korean to be nominated for Best Supporting Actress. And she was fantastic. She was kind of like the glue in Minari that really had that story turn in so many different ways. So, yeah, that was cool. See, again, you want to know a movie that's going to maybe win zero awards but has a billion nominations? Mank.
Man.
My biggest takeaway, they're like, who was it? In the office of Smitty's like, man, Mank's nominated like seven times. I'm like, I don't think it's going to win one award either. I think it's going
to
go over.
Fincher's going to be very drunk by the end of the night.
It's not the best in any category it's nominated in, and I thought it was good, right?
So the only place I would even really consider it maybe a super design? Contender. Yeah, I was going to say production design or soundtrack. Like, I really like the soundtrack to Mank, but Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross also did Soul, which I think is a way, way better shot of winning. So yeah. It kind of sucks. Mank.
I know Mank was in costume design.
See costume for Mank.
But director, I don't think Fincher's going to get that one. And then in, it was a makeup and hairstyling as well. I don't know enough about that category to speak on it. I can maybe see it getting one of those awards. I mean, production design.
Production kind of. I could see production because it's such a nod to old Hollywood. But I would say, I mean, it's not really the favorite in most or any of them. So,
you know what's a favorite in one category? The Midnight Sky, favorite in VFX.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine that it comes to you with an Oscar, even if it's a technical one like that?
One of our other co-worker is maybe he's on like the level playing field. Biz from our hockey podcast, Spittin' Chicklets, just one half like the biggest flavored vodka in the world. He was in the office the other day, and he came up to me, and he's like, "I'm still thinking about The Midnight Sky from December and how fucking much I hated that movie." And that was I hadn't even thought of it since December, and I forgot everyone who watched it like told us both you and me they were like, "What the fuck was that movie?"
So The Midnight Sky, dude, this shit was bad. That's my biz impression. Hey, what's up, guy?
Severe lack of Canadian.
Great guy. Matt. It's very tough to do because he has deep Canadian. It's tough for me.
Best guy in the Biz walks into this office and he shakes every fucking person's hand like he's a politician. It's unbelievable.
So yeah, it's amazing.
I do think, so in terms of screenplay, like adapted, I do think Nomadland's going to take that. And then the original screenplay, I think it's between Judas and the Black Messiah and Minari. I don't see anyone outside of those two in original screenplay winning in that category. I mean, Sound of Metal from an overall... It was my favorite movie of the year from an overall execution, but my favorite is Judas and the Black Messiah. And just in that screenplay, I mean, that was great.
Yeah, but people were also kind of confused, I think, at the Borat 2 being nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. They consider any sequel to be an adapted screenplay, if anyone was confused by that. Like, anything as a sequel, it's technically made off of a previous property to them.
It shouldn't even have been nominated, though.
I agree. I know. I totally agree.
I agree with the supporting actress nomination because she was fantastic in that movie, but anything else is just kind of like, and also keep in mind, this was a very tough year for movies, obviously. So
it was, but there were some good fucking movies.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm just saying, like, there were good movies, but I don't think the depth of the pool maybe was as deep as it would have been.
Kind of bummed that another round didn't get nominated for Best Picture too. Like, obviously it's likely going to win Best International. And then Thomas Vinterberg wins gets nominated for Best Director. I actually, when he got nominated, I was like, oh, fuck. I mean, they may nominate that for Best Picture, but they did not.
And it's also weird to not have, like, comic book movies and Star Wars movies and, like, the visual effects categories,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Like, normally you go down the board and you get past the main awards and you get to, like, visual effects and sound and all that stuff. And it's, like, Avengers, Star Wars, stuff like that. That's where they get their awards. But they actually had to go and pick real movies this time. No, I'm sorry. No, I didn't mean it like that. But you know what I'm saying.
Best visual effects for
Marty Trill. Listen, baby, that's not Marty cinema.
Trillzy.
I'm going to become an old Hollywood guy. It's like, that's not movies, baby. You haven't seen movies until you see my movies. And a guy floating around samurai. Space. His name is what? Doctor Strange? Please. I hate him.
Give me a break.
Doctor Strange, forget that.
This episode brought to you in part also by Vincero. I hope I'm saying that right. But boy, do they send some fucking cool-ass watches. That's right, our newest sponsor. They want to make sure that you get a watch that is stylish, got some class, a sexy look to it, and it's not expensive. Very cool. I had a hard time picking. They were like, hey, we're going to give you a watch. You try out the watch. I had a hard time picking mine, Ken Jack.
Same, me too. Although I do love mine. I came away a very happy man.
Yeah, they had so many awesome-looking watches. Because a lot of times... You know, you'd be like, ah, that's kind of gimmicky. So many. I had a hard time choosing. But yes, they are fantastic.
The first thing I notice about a man, baby, is his watch.
They understand the frustrations
of online shopping. They get it, folks. 5-year warranty, 365-day return policy, stress-free shopping, honest prices. They got over 27,000 5-star reviews. We're one of them. Don't settle for a bad-looking product, even though you want something maybe a little less expensive. Great colors, great styles. They also have bracelets, wallets, sunglasses, all that stuff for both men and women. Don't overpay for a watch that looks cheap and disappoints. It's also about to be spring, summer. You're going to be going out a little more. Things are opening up. Have a nice watch on. Some other stuff. So don't overpay.
When I get into my Studebaker, I look at my watch, and I make sure it's gleaming. I make sure the time's set up. I don't even know.
I could tell you were running out of things on that one. Yeah, Vincero collective.com/lights, VINCERO collective.com/lights. 15% off applied on your entire order for a limited time, covering all the shipping. Promo code lights. Vincero collective.com, VINCERO collective.com. I'm trying to say it like it is, like in an Italian way as I can, because I just watched all of Conan and Jordan Schlansky go to Italy yesterday on YouTube, which is always fantastic. Anything with Jordan Schlansky is outstanding. Go to that link and use the discount lights. It's already lower cost and 50% off. Yeah. Incredible. Other news, not a lot of news. DC is developing a film based on the popular comic The Hourman.
All right.
Lizzie.
Uzi. He has a Vincenzo's watch. He keeps track of time.
That's what he tells the time.
He's the Hourman.
Tell us more about The Hourman, because I saw the news break, but I didn't know enough about it, so I didn't even read it. So tell us about The Hourman.
We're gonna talk about The Hourman from DC. The Hourman looks very cool. Hourman is the name of three different fictional superheroes appearing in comics published by DC Comics. There you go. There's your first bit of information. Yeah. The first Hourman is chemist Rex Tyler, who creates a new synthesis.
I thought this movie was about Sting.
Synthesis. Fuck you.
Miraclo, which grants him super strength and endurance, but only for 1 hour.
Sting.
And yeah, no, you're dead on, true.
I keep doing that joke.
Da ba 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 da 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 tears of gold.
I remember you. You remember me. Upon the fields of Bali. The Hourman.
I'm ending the pod with Layla by.
Beautiful, Goodfellas, baby.
No, by Chumi. Change the World by Eric Clapton.
Okay,
this is just like I don't care. Phenomenon. I think that was on the Phenomenon soundtrack.
Double check that.
The 1996, I think 96, John Travolta, post Pulp Fiction vehicle. Either Phenomenon or Michael.
Yeah, Change the World. If it was Michael, I would have remembered, I feel like. Yeah, it was Phenomenon, yeah. If it was Michael, I would have remembered. God, I love Michael. What a movie. He's an angel and he smokes cigarettes. What a cool guy.
It's like the young Pope.
Anything, there, a King of the Hill revival being discussed. There's really not a lot of news. I hate disappointing, but there just isn't.
King of the Hill revival is a bad idea, but I do think Mike Judge can pull it off.
He's very rarely failed us.
Yeah, he usually hits. The only thing I think he's ever missed on is there was an animated show of his that didn't last very long.
Which one?
And I forget what it was called. It was, I think it was on Fox like in 2013 or something, I want to say. I could be completely wrong.
The Fox one?
Maybe. And then he had a movie called Extract, I think.
Extract wasn't that bad.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
I wouldn't consider that a miss.
I don't think it was like up to the Judgian standards that I
That's
expect.
Fair. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think he was, let's see. He was a writer on or an actor on Frasier? Wow. Good for him, man.
What if Sting did the Frasier theme song? Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling.
I said it, scrambled eggs. That was a great Sting impression by me.
Yeah, he absolutely nailed it.
What was the name? What was the name of Niles' love interest, Frasier?
Fuck! Now you got me. I actually had this as a trivia question once.
Niles' love interest?
It's Ross? No, that's not right.
Roz? No, Roz is the coworker of
Frasier. Yeah, Roz. Yeah. Yeah, not Roz.
Daphne.
Yes.
Daphne. You don't have to care for my dad.
Or my dog, don't forget.
That's the intro to the revival.
The Hourman.
Dog is dead.
A lot of time has passed, but the dog's still dead.
Again, I still think if they started the new Frasier and the dog was just inexplicably still alive, it'd be very funny.
It would be pretty funny. Just still going.
So the show is called The Good Family, by the way. The Mike Judge show. It was on ABC.
That sounds... I got to see it.
I can think of the animation in my head. That had that mint green on it, didn't it?
Yes.
For 4 months. It just did. Oh, it got four months.
It's got that Mike Judge look. It looks like a cartoon about Silicon Valley, too. I don't know why. Like the characters just like look
a little
like...
Putting nature to his what do you call it, his animation.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. One more ad read. One more reading of the ad. Mack Weldon. Got to get those t-shirts, folks. They're starting to warm up. Mack Weldon's got the best t-shirts. Mm. They got the Ace lines as well. The Ace sweatpants. Also Ace sweat shorts, too. Look, it's time to go outside. It's time to go out. Things are starting to open up. People getting vaccinated. So prep for it. Plan for it. I'm not saying you have to go out right now. I'm saying prep and plan for it, though. You don't want to be caught when things are opening back up and people are out and they're moving around and you're at bars and you're like, well, I don't got anything to wear. I look schlubby. Mack Weldon, MacWeldon.com/lights. Enter promo code lights for 20% off. MacWeldon has so many things. Boxer briefs, underwear, which they got a fantastic return policy. You don't like the first pair, you can keep it. They got a loyalty program. You get free shipping on level one and level two. If you spend $200, you get 20% off every order. You look great and you feel great with MacWeldon. All the material is so finely put together. Maybe later in the year, you're going on a trip again. You're going on the beach. You got the Weekender bag. You got a card holder. Just great. Top to bottom, you will find a way to buy everything on that website. MacWeldon is outstanding. MacWeldon.com/lights for 20% off. Enter promo code LIGHTS.
Wearing my MacWeldon underwear right now. I honestly, I've said it before. I want to just wash it every single day because I love wearing it so much. It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, some people aren't wearing antimicrobial underwear and
got germy balls. Ugh. You freak. You got swamped up nuts.
I like the infused silver, just destroying all the fart particles. I know I'm in good hands.
That's exactly how that works. It's just like a vacuum that sucks up your farts. It's like an air purifier around your asshole. That's exactly how that goes. I do love them though. I honestly, like, I wish I could have a way to just wash them every single day so I could just continuously wear them. But you know what the answer to that is? You just continuously buy more MacWeldon underwear.
I'm looking at their underwear right now.
Let's say you look lost and you were lost in their underwear. Trill, you know, we talked about on Trivia, by the way, Trivia Show, The Dozen on YouTube, Barstool Sports. If you don't watch it and you listen to the show, please watch it. It would help me out a lot. We talked about Wow potato chips.
Alestra.
just chronic shitting after eating Doritos.
Truly a magnificent time in snack history when we decided that fat was the thing that made you fat from potato chips and not the 180 calories per serving. So what if you just did away with the fat but kept the calories?
It's like the chips,
1500 calorie chip that has zero trans fat, so you're good.
Well, like, apparently the big thing with Alestra wasn't that it just made you shit, is that it caused anal leakage, which is
that's a funny term. I don't care how old I get, I'll never not laugh at anal leakage.
I don't know. I never had that problem with the Alestra, but I also had a fat boy stomach of steel back when I was the Wow potato chips in the Indianapolis test market.
If you tried one of those right now, your stomach would explode.
Oh,
or implode. I don't know how that would work.
It would send me to the ER without a doubt. I just got into an ancient bag of Wow potato chips that was kept in like the Rockford, Illinois potato chip factory that they have there or something. And I just ate it like a dog jumping up on the counter and stealing it.
Food from you like counter. Dragged it away.
They find me in the corner of the potato chip museum, just face completely covered in Olestra grease or whatever it is. And immediately my stomach just goes,
a singularity would literally form in your gut. It would be incredible. Doctors wouldn't know what to do. Like, how do we cure Alestra poisoning? We have no clue what to do here.
They don't have the antidote like they did back in 1998.
It's like in those movies where, like,
the pharmacy for fucking years.
It's like in movies when, like, someone goes to the future and has the common cold and it just wipes out human civilization because they don't know how to cure it. We don't know how to fix Alestra anymore.
I would go on like Top Chef or one of those shows and just start adding Alestra to everything.
That's the Iron Chef. The secret ingredient is
Alestra.
Oh, fuck.
It's just a paint can full of Alestra. Alestra glazed short ribs.
Oh.
The judges are sitting on the toilet as they review it.
Duck fat confit. With Alestra instead of the actual duck fat.
All in, what's going on down there? Well, it looks like you're putting the Alestra in the ice cream machine. Ah, oh, great.
Okay. Use your in the background. Like the very instantly distinguishable sound of a fart in a toilet bowl.
Yeah, he took a chef's right piece and now he's in the bathroom shitting. So I'll be back.
So sponsored by Kohler.
Joe Manganiello, he's in Justice League. Zack Snyder's Justice League. Talked to him about that. talking about Shoplifters of the World as well, and a bunch of other things. And we also, yes, we finally did it. I didn't want to ever ask Joe Manganiello, our first interview, had your Sofia Vergara, who he's married to, she's got a picture of Buca di Beppo. So we waited, and we finally showed him the picture for the third episode. He had never seen it before. We asked him about it. Here's our interview. All right, for the third time, which I think is a record, unless Jesse Eisenberg's been on three times, which I don't think he has. Joe Manganiello, you know, fuck it. No, you hold the record. You're the record holder of most appearances on this show by somebody who doesn't work at this company. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm going to have a belt made up, and I'm going to carry it with me into every interview.
That's perfect.
Perfect. Perfect. Can't have someone take it from you, though.
Yeah.
Like a Hell in the Cell match with Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah, me and Jesse, ladder match, briefcase match, steel cage. Let's go.
Yes,
perfect. Let me tell you something, Eisenberg. Oh, yeah. When this group gets his hands on Luther, yeah, the cream of the crop. Yeah.
Jesse Eisenberg cutting a promo for WWE isn't something I want to imagine. As much as I love the guy, a phenomenal actor, I don't know if he can do that.
That would be quite the tabloid headline. Joe Manganiello beats up Jesse Eisenberg over podcast appearance. Yeah.
Over podcast beef.
We got a couple things to talk about today, but I will note off the top, I feel like we talked to you in January, but your hair is back to, I think, what we're usually used to seeing with your hair. How are you feeling about the hair?
Yeah, it's back to a normal length, I think. It's not really so much about what I think about my hair. It's how does my wife feel about my hair? That's really the most important factor in this conversation. But I love this past year getting to, I think I went through just about every badass cool hair style you could do, other than maybe like the Keith Flint of the Prodigy, like reverse mohawk. I didn't get that.
Let's open up with Shoplifters of the World. We'll give a little synopsis here. One crazy night in the life of four friends reeling from the sudden demise of iconic British band The Smiths, while the local airwaves are hijacked at gunpoint by an impassioned Smiths fan. Now, we're talking about two movies here today. I think our fan base, I think everyone knows what the Snyder Cut is. But for those who may not know about Shoplifters of the World, fill them in. March 26th.
Yes, with 20 Smith songs, most of which have never been used in film and TV. Wow. So if you're a Smiths fan, you're going to love it. And I also, you know, it was interesting watching the kids that were in the cast get introduced to the Smiths, some of them, and watching kind of the light bulb go on in them and seeing the obsessive, you know, the obsessive nature that the Smiths bring up in terms of their fans turn on. And that was really fun. So I think it's, you know, it's going to bring all this music to a whole new generation. And my part's really fun. I play Full Metal Mickey at Kiss 101 Denver. And I'm in the middle of playing Bark at the Moon by Ozzy. And I get held up at gunpoint by this crazed gunman who wants me to play Take Off Ozzy, don't play the new Kiss album, and play nothing but Smiths all night long to impress this girl that he's in love with, which is actually based on a true story.
Oh, really? Okay. Okay, that leads into the next question is, I mean, obviously there's an obsession over the Smiths. And for you, like you said, you have these younger actors, people learning it. Like, what is it about the Smiths? Like, why? What's the draw in your eyes as a man who enjoys the music?
First of all, the music's unbelievable. Morrissey is a poet. And the juxtaposition of unbelievably depressive or introspective lyrics, he's the perfect amount of melancholy. If you find melancholy romantic, or just to sit in kind of sit in that, you know, then those are the Smiths fans. You know, like nobody gets depression better than him. Nobody gets loneliness. Nobody gets the frustration of loneliness better than Morrissey. And oftentimes there's this, like I said, there's these very introspective lyrics going on with a music style that is the complete opposite, and finding the juxtaposition of those worlds together. I just think, you know, they were one of those bands that, God, I mean, they changed everything. There's kind of before the Smiths and after Smiths, there's a few of those bands, and definitely they are for independent or alternative music, but they are that.
I love that description of wallowing in melancholy. I think that that pretty much sums up the Smiths listening experience to a T. I agree with that completely. Yeah. So you worked with a guy, and you're going to have to correct me on the pronunciation because I've seen it pronounced like 1,000 different ways. Stephen Kishak or Stephen Kajik?
Kayak,
even better. 0 for 2 on the two people that I saw pronounce his name in interviews before. So he's a guy who's worked on music-based movies and shows a lot before. What is his passion like just for the world of music?
Well, he knows, nobody knows it better than him, and music, and nobody knows the Smiths better than him. He is Smiths super fan number one. So, it was important also as a producer to make sure that we weren't making a movie that was going to be accused of being a caricature of the time. We had no interest in doing that. And a lot of 80s movies can slide into caricature. And no, we wanted it to feel authentic so that you felt like you were actually at a house party, you know, in 1987. And mind you, we're also dealing with all of the archetypical tropes that weren't addressed in 80s movies. You know, maybe Ali Sheedy and Breakfast Club would belong in our movie, but other than that, kind of, you know, underrepresented. Steven was that person. He was in those groups. He was at those parties. A lot of this is like what he remembers in his mind about that time. And so, he was on top of all of the different departments and making sure that this thing was authentic. And that allows you to trust him.
It's always nice to get a voice of authenticity in any movie like this, just because it makes it feel a little bit less, you know.
Got to.
Fake. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. If you could hijack a radio station, have them play 24 hours, one band only, what would it be?
I mean, what would I play all day long? If it has to be one band, this is a good idea. That's a good idea. I would definitely put that up there as far as body of work. Other than that, maybe it's tricky, man. Like if I could have gone like Pantera right around Far Beyond Driven, so you only had those albums to work backwards for, then maybe that. DJ Z Trip, well, it's not really fair. He's kind of a mashup DJ, but he DJ at my wedding, I would get.
Hey, look, you get Metallica. The entire catalog. That's perfect. Oh, even better. Great catalog.
You deal with Metallica Black Album and Back.
Beautiful. I love
You're
that.
Only going to play the Black Album and Back.
That's the Step Brothers only 80s Joel. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Shoplifters of the World. So that's March 26th. The other movie we're going to talk about, which we've seen the Justice League, the Zack Snyder's The Justice League. Excuse me. Let me say that the proper way. That is out. This interview, it's out today. Yeah, it's out tonight. If you're listening to this interview on the day this interview drops, it's out tonight. And it is a massive, epic movie on a grand 4-hour plus scale, which the last time we talked to you, we had a couple Snyder Cut comments, but then there was like news that dropped about you the day after we interviewed you. So we unfortunately missed the window by a hair, but it doesn't matter now because we've seen the fucking thing. How excited, I mean, we've talked to you about like how excited you were about everything that involves this movie. The first time we talked to you, there was something you posted on Instagram. People were like, does that mean he's back? Does that mean he's coming back? And now we won't spoil much. We'll keep this spoiler free, but people know your involvement. We've seen pictures and stuff. Now that it's all been done, how happy are you that you were able to go back and do this and even just get a taste again of this character, which we see a figurine of Deathstroke behind you right now in this interview. So we know how much it means to you.
Yeah, I know. Well, that was from Joel McHale. Joel's a buddy, and I'm friends with also Sideshow Collectibles who make those.
Those are the best.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome. That was a gift. It was fun to get to go back. Zach and I are working on something else, so that was. You know, I had been talking to him and seeing him via Zoom for a while up to that point. So, but it was good to go see him. It was fun to put the suit back on. It was fun. It's brief. It's fun. It was, Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much
is it there. Too much of a tease, though, for you? Or does it make you just go, fuck, I want to do this in full? Like,
Well, yeah, I did. I mean, but after, you know, the string of cancellations that happened in the wake of Batman being canceled, you know, I was cast to be a Batman. So that was actually, I wasn't, you know, like the Justice League tag on at the end was meant to advertise the Batman movie. So, and then you just go, I don't need to go into all of them, but there was a ton of movies that didn't happen after that that involved the character. And so, you know, you let it go, you know, you can't, you know, you just, I didn't sit around thinking about it. I was on to the next thing. So getting a call years later that, you know, to come put the suit back on. Yeah, that was fun. I mean, it was, like I said, it was a good time.
Yeah, without spoiling, we can say that the movie does set a lot of things in motion. So I feel like it's always with any superhero property, it's a never say never thing. It's everything's made up. Anyone can come back to life. Anyone can come back in a different timeline. So anything could really ever happen. After we saw the movie, we saw and noticed in some of the reshoots why you had to have the mohawk. And was that your favorite hairstyle you ever got to sport?
Why I had to have it? I didn't have to have it. It's just that it fit something that I wrote in the Deathstroke origin treatment that I was working.
So do tell. So
the mohawk didn't have to be there. I talked to Zach. I was like, hey, I have this idea. It ties in with this other thing, you know, that I wrote years ago. You know, what do you think? Mohawk? And he was like, yeah, do it. So that was why. I like the white mohawk. I think that was cool. That was fun. Yeah, that was a good time. The blue ones, that's over the top, but I like the white.
Classy. Yeah. It's Silver Fox.
Yeah. Did you speaking of Eisenberg, did you reshoot anything with him or is that all separately? Yeah.
No, the stuff with Jesse is just this the original scene. So you can see that they could zoom further out on him because, you know, when you bald cap somebody and you can't just shave their head for a reshoot or shoot, you know, when you reshoot the teaser for Justice League 2, they shot his coverage like this so that you wouldn't see that he was, if you zoom out, then it's not going to match with this bald cap. So you can see that they could use some of the medium shots and long shots actually of him. And the dialogue is restored to what we originally recorded.
Have you gotten a chance to watch the whole movie yet?
Yeah, I watched it last week. So Sophia and I sat down and we watched it all the way through 4 hours.
Can you, for those, because so we gave our tease, we talked about the grand scale and like what it is, like the mythology, and I know Zack Snyder dove into that a little bit. For people who haven't seen it yet, what are your takeaways? Like, what can people expect from how big, like it's a crazy movie. At least that's how we viewed it.
Yeah, it is. It's, you're going to get, I think the story is fixed where, you know, you understand Steppenwolf's motivations. Also all of the CGI is really spotless this time around. And you get Darkseid and Desaad. So you get, yeah, that it ties into the Steppenwolf arc, and then from there, it's pretty cool what they did. You're gonna get more questions. I think there's a lot of things in the film that are gonna make people curious about what would have happened next or what could potentially happen next. I think that it's going to feed all those real diehard fans. You know, it's like I said, it's just a much better movie.
Agreed. We don't disagree with you on that one. Yeah.
How important do you think it was that Zack Snyder got the opportunity to just kind of do what he had originally wanted to do in the first place?
Well, it's a bit unheard of to get to do that. The only other example is like, you know, George Lucas going back and tinkering with his own movies, you know, but he owned them all. So for a studio to allow a director to go back in and restore the film, fix the film. This is really, there is no comparison, I think, or there's no comp for that. So, I also was fascinated by to see what Zach would have done or what he wanted to do. I think it's a lot of what fans of that film really wanted, they're going to get.
That's for sure.
That's what we said. We were like, honestly, and like, we enjoyed it. Even if you hate it, anyone who can't see, like, holy shit, the fans are going to go nuts. I just don't think they, that just mean, might mean, like, I hate saying this, that sounds snobby, but I just think that means they don't get it. Cause that was my first takeaway. I'm like, oh man, a Die Hard, they're going to love this. This is everything they want. Justice League. That is out, HBO Max as well. I imagine everyone who's listening to this is going to be checking that out. Though you did mention another Zack Snyder tease. That's something that we know, or is there something that you got going on with Zach that you can't talk about?
It's out there. Okay. No, it was out there. It's floating around. It's the Army of the Dead Lost Vegas.
Okay.
Yeah. Animated series.
Oh, animated series. Oh, okay. I didn't know they were doing that.
Okay. So no, I rare we miss movie news.
Yeah. So that'll drop at some point. Later on, it involves a lot of the characters. Well, some of the characters, I should say. Some of them get eaten, but some of them from Army of the Dead. And it's kind of like a prequel equal to the movie. And that'll be later on at some point this year, maybe during the summer, I think.
Oh, I love that.
That was really fun.
They just released a Pacific Rim anime series on Netflix that's been awesome. And I feel like animated, like when you're able to kind of like do whatever you want visually and stylistically because of it, you don't have the same shackles with an animated series as you do with like real life. Like there's just so much more you can go into, and especially something like zombies. I think that's awesome. I love to hear that.
Yeah. And also, you know, a lot of it also is COVID, you know, and we have to pivot and we have to figure out how to keep bringing entertainment at the highest levels when we couldn't have people getting together to shoot the movie live. So this was actually like a perfect, you know, a perfect situation.
Yeah, and zombies are pretty close quarter affair usually as far as actual shooting.
Yeah.
So we've interviewed you a couple times. You know, we got a lot of like the old movie questions out of the way. We've done the Magic Mic. We've done all that. Yeah. I had to open it up to our audience a little bit. I had to let our audience ask some questions.
We have a question from a user, Spark Lamore. He asked you to apologize for making kids afraid of high school bullies, because a lot of us growing up in middle school went into high school thinking we're going to have to fight full-grown ass men like you.
Well, then you should be friends with me. Just be cool with me, man. What are you trying to antagonize me right out of the gate, man? That's the last thing I need. Some dude's going to try to prove a point to me. You know, it's like, man, be cool, and I'll be cool to you. I used to threaten to fight kids on the football team because they were beating up and harassing the artistic kids that I was friends with. So, you know, I was that guy. I was the defender of all of the skateboarders.
You know? So you weren't like Flash in real life, is what you're trying to say.
It's called acting. It's called range.
I love the idea that I like that some kid had never been into a high school before and he only watched Spider-Man and he's like, ah, fuck. Oh,
they're all so 18?
Yeah. Well, we were all, I think we were 24. Toby and I think were around this. Like, Toby might have been 25. I think I was 24. I think James was maybe 23. Kirsten turned 18 on set. So she actually was the appropriate age, but none of us. Yeah. We had to shave twice a day on set.
Keep the baby.
I'm serious. Yeah. You had to shave before you got there. And then at some point during the day, they would come around with a tray of razors on it.
Oh my God.
And they would want you to just like dry shave it right there in the mirror.
Oh no.
Yeah. All Jesus, of us to make sure that we didn't look 30. You know,
I love the idea because obviously you are a much bigger human than Tony Revolori. I would love when they do this, but when we think it's Spider-Verse in December, love them to be like, are you shitting me in a different universe?
This like, it's like the Judge and Altuve picture. It would be hilarious. Yes. We have one more. We have all of our audience members asked this, and this is because it's something we had brought up. We need to show you the picture of you. It's your better half doing an ad for a restaurant called Buca di Beppo, and Jeff's going to pull it up because it is one of the most phenomenal pictures I think
we think that that Sophia is probably in the greatest restaurant ad of all time. It's the greatest restaurant ad ever put out there, because it's just the most excessive amount of pasta meatballs we've ever seen. Have you seen this photo before?
No, this is okay. Thank you for bringing it to my attention. She will never live it down in my presence ever again.
We're big fast food sit down chain people, and we were talking Buca di Beppo. They have like the Pope table, and we were like, holy shit. We discovered it live in the podcast. This is the greatest ad ever.
Looks like we're getting the Pope table, my friend.
200,000 meatballs, and they're all like 10 pounds each. They're like old-timey dumbbells.
I'd be the one eating all of that, so I don't know.
The follow-up on that, because they're like, all right, you've had them on three times. You got it. People are like, why do you never bring up the Buca di Beppo photo? But the other follow-up is that she also has won Kids' Choice Awards. And we do love Kids' Choice. Do those exist in your home? Do you have the Kids' Choice Awards?
Yeah, she has her stuff downstairs. Yeah, so she's got little orange blimp.
Blimp. Yeah, the blimp is right below the Oscar statuette in my eyes. That's just my opinion. And maybe it's my age. I just think the blimp is right up there. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, we got some orange blimps down there.
Before we go, now it's time. We're going to do a little quiz. We're going to see how well you know your roles, how well you know your stuff. Here we go. Mm-hmm. April 2002, Spider-Man premiered at what theater? Do you remember where Spider-Man debuted?
Well, yeah, April 2002, that would have been the UCLA Bruin Theater in Westwood.
Okay, yeah, money. That's
correct.
Seemed rather hard. Okay.
There was a giant inflatable Spider-Man holding to the top of the theater like King Kong. It was cool. And that carpet, that was the biggest carpet ever. I mean, that still to this day, that carpet was massive.
Must have been pretty cool for one of your first movies. All right, next question. In Behind Enemy Lines, Columbia, what was your character's name?
Lieutenant Sean Macklin.
Wow, spot amazing. That was so quick. I thought you'd have to dig deep. That was a pretty, not that long ago, but like long enough ago.
That was a fun time, man. That was a great time.
Who directed Smurfs The Lost Village?
Oh, my God. I mean,
this is always hard with voice roles. We always have people stumble on these.
I know, man, because it's like there's like six people that I thought directed it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think I'd be there and be like, oh, hey, you know, and.
Actors always stumble on this.
Kelly Asbury is the name.
Oh, so Kelly was usually on a monitor. I was talking to Kelly through a monitor. So, like, in my brain, it doesn't stick. Yeah,
makes sense. Yeah. All right, now you're all right. Two for three. Two, still good.
Okay.
What is the name of your character in How I Met Your Mother?
What is the name of my
character in How I Met Your Mother?
Ah, Brad.
Brad what?
Shit. Oh, yeah, last name.
Yeah, that's right.
What was Brad's last name? Why did they pick that? What was it? It's Brad. Oh my God. What episode was it revealed?
It's very plain last name. Marshall introduces you. Hey, this is my friend Brad. Oh, I see the pain on your face. It's Brad Morris.
Brad Morris. All right. Why was it Brad Morris? It's weird. Yeah, okay.
How many mother?
That's cleared.
All right, we're 500 now. I'm going to let you get within five. Within five, how many total episodes of True Blood were you in?
41.
Oh, 42. Oh, man.
Wow. Damn. Amazing. Okay. That was well done.
Okay, get some all right, this credit one, on that one.
I'm bleeding out of my nose.
I think this one might be easier. Okay. Who is the coach of the 2009 Stanley Cup winning Penguins?
Brain.
You used up all your brain power on the last one. The last one is much harder.
Why is my brain not functioning right now?
Dan Bilsma.
Yep, Dan Bilsma.
Bilsma, yeah.
The last time we talked, by the way, I'm not gonna, I can't, I have no Super Bowls as a fan, but the Browns did beat the Steelers. I just wanted to note that.
The Browns did beat the Steelers. Nobody's trying to.
Also, Chase Claypool called me a fucking weenie on Instagram. So he called me. Somebody here filmed me for the Barstool Instagram. I was like, Chase Claypool was saying things about the Browns won. And then he tagged me. He goes, this guy's a weenie. So I got, yeah, he roasted me online. Yeah. Which I can't say shit to Chase Claypool. I just took the win and I left. I was like, all right, I'm walking away. Browns won the Steelers for once. Yeah, I'll take that. Last thing, you won 4 awards at 3 award shows for True Blood. Name the 3 award shows.
I'm going to look up on my shelf right now. I'm going to go Scream.
Yep.
Saturn.
Yep.
New Now Next.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. New Now Next. Also, you didn't. This only existed 1 year. I feel like you would have won it. What's the award? What's the Spike TV award?
I think it's just the Spike TV awards. But which one? Luckiest Bastard or Coolest Dude or like
Spike TV Luckiest Bastard award. Now that's an award.
Yeah, they'd be like Coolest Dude, Best Bicep.
But when you say it, it sounds like you're saying it with such venom. You know what I mean? Is someone like, wow, here's the Luckiest Bastard? You like, here's the Luckiest Bastard award.
Luckiest Bastard.
You here? Go. I hope you fucking trip and it impales you, you asshole. You know, like that's what it makes it sound like you're saying. You know?
Oh man,
The Luckiest Bastard I've ever seen. You know?
Thank you so much again for hanging out with us. Shoplifters of the World, March 26th. Justice League is out. If you're listening on the day this drops tonight, if not, it's already out. Thanks again. Also, reminder, just search your wife's name, Buca de Beppo. Bang. You'll find that picture. It's one of the greatest advertisements ever made because it just, we will go to Buca de Beppo every time.
Next to the John Leguizamo Sky Vodka, where he has a parrot in a, like a purple silk robe. Like unironically, that was pretty good.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Always a blast. Can't wait to talk to you again.
Thanks, good to see you guys.
Good to see you. All right. Thanks again to our good buddy, Joe Manganiello. He's outstanding.
Can you imagine going home and then, like, her just being like, how was your day? And he was like, well, I did this press hit and they pulled up this picture of you in a Buca de Beppo and asked me about it. And she's like, I don't even remember that.
What if she never did it? She was just in a green screen. They just did this green screened in all the meatballs.
She's just holding like a giant softball and a fork.
I don't want to go to Buca de Beppo so bad.
We will review Zack Snyder's The Justice League, which it does sound like Joe Manganiello wishes he would have been in more than he was. And not even in more, because he was only in it for the bad, but he wishes he'd been in the DC universe a little more than he was. Someone fix that.
Yep.
Someone fix that. Because he fucking loves that character. And you see what happens, Ryan Reynolds, when you give the person who likes the character a chance to do what they think is the best thing to do with the character.
Passion, man. Makes all the goddamn difference.
Which is why the Snyder Cut, even if people don't like it, a lot of people will, because you let the person do what they want to do. Which doesn't always work, but when it's that much passion, and again, this guy loves Deathstroke. And you can just tell. You can tell by the way he talks. Someone let him fucking do it. Chaos Walking. From Doug Liman, who has one of the most fascinating filmographies of all time. Getting In, Swingers, The Bourne Identity, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Jumper, Fair Game, Edge of Tomorrow, The Wall, American Made, and then in this year, Lockdown and Chaos Walking, two of the worst movies for me this year. I know we all hated Lockdown. Chaos Walking, though. In the not too distant future, Todd Hewitt, played by Tom Holland, discovers Viola, played by Daisy Ridley, a mysterious girl who crash lands on his planet where all the women have disappeared and the men are inflicted by the noise, not the Noid, a force that puts all their thoughts on display. In this dangerous landscape, Viola's
God damn, I want some pizza.
Life is threatened, and as Todd vows to protect her, he will have to discover his own inner power and unlock the planet's dark secrets. This was the first movie Ken, Jack, and I saw back at the theaters. Just a heads up.
Just an entire planet of men who are craving dominoes. And all the dominoes disappeared.
They're all sitting there waiting on their fucking hands and knees for like the domino ship to enter orbit and deliver pizza to them.
They all like have like utility belts with their order tracker on it, which is like permanently stuck at like preparing, just waiting for it to change.
Oh God.
Oh boy.
A couple people in it that you would recognize. Most Everyone, Daisy Ridley, Tom Holland, Mads Mikkelsen, Damian Bashir, Cynthia Erivo, Nick Jonas, David Oyelowo. They started filming this movie. First of all, they tried to make the movie like 10 years ago. A lot of different people were connected to it. Charlie Kaufman was connected to it at one point. They tried to cast someone else. That one is slipping my mind. They started filming it. They announced things in 2017. This movie was made. They started making this a while ago. Let's put it that way. And they finally released it. I think it's quite bad. I really don't like it. I think, some of it is cool in concept. But I thought this thing was a fucking mess. It just felt so disjointed and out of focus. And it just felt like a movie that has gone through a billion fucking changes and reshoots. And they scraped everything together and they came out with a pretty fucking bad movie. I was just very much not a fan of Chaos Walking. I gave it a 25 out of 100. We'll talk more about it. Doug Liman's made some great movies. I would not consider this to be one of them. Ken Jack, you may have a different take, though.
The Doug Liman is like the meme, like he don't miss, except it's just like he miss, because he does miss often.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Like I say, so often. So I think that going into this movie, I thought I was going to be super bad just based on the reaction that was going around on like Twitter, Instagram, whatever. But I don't think it's that bad. But it's also not very good. It's kind of cornered in the phantom zone of like mediocre sci-fi movies like Oblivion and like Chronicles of Riddick, which I just rewatched, and movies like that. And I think I was okay with both Tom Holland and Daisy Ridley on like an individual level, but they just didn't mesh as a lead duo at all. Like, period. They're both too big to be like sharing a lead in this. Mads Mikkelsen was a passable villain, but I think for us as an audience, knowing what he can do just makes me feel like it's like a wasted opportunity because he was so toned down. And nobody else, I think, in the cast left an impression on me, except for maybe the fact that I now think Nick Jonas can play a good petulant child. And on the technical end, I enjoyed the world they built a fair amount. Like the Scandinavian atmosphere was cool. The space age gear and the props, like that all worked for me. And it almost reminded me of like District 9 in that sense, like especially the way they did sci-fi shit. But it just, the prospect, by the way, some of them had like AK-47s and SVTs. Like, why? How the fuck would you get that on a ship flying out to a future world in like the late 25th or 24th century? That was crazy. But and I like some of the fight scenes and the CGI was solid for the most part. But I think that the big problem is that so much is left on the table. Like, I think the idea of the noise is pretty cool because I do think the world would devolve into like the chaos they were talking about if people weren't to be able to conceal what they were thinking. And they were serious enough to get away from like the corny what women want territory, but they just didn't explore the possibilities they had available, especially when it comes to like illusions. And we just watched Spider-Man Homecoming, right? And like it was Tom Holland fighting versus like an illusion based bad guy. We saw how well that could be done. And I don't think it was done well in this at all.
That's a great point. Actually,
every man gets the noise from falling into a bathtub like Mel Gibson did in What Women Want. Wasn't that what happened to him?
Yeah, every single one has to go through the same process. And I also don't think they to tease the Spackle, which, by the way, I know it's from the book. You got to change the alien name. Spackle is just a shitty alien name. And it just the future conflict just wasn't teased well. Exactly. So that's what the Woody call comes in. I was going to say aspartame. But I think you could just almost tell they were gearing themselves up for a franchise because so much was left like unexplained and not properly teased. And like instead, you're kind of at the end of it, just kind of left wondering why the fuck everything is so underdeveloped. And I think Liman should have been more focused on making sure this was a successful standalone movie, and it would have succeeded then. But I don't know at this point. I ended up giving it a 45 out of 100. I think it's in the mediocre to bad zone, but it's not unwatchably bad.
Yeah, I'm the same. I give it a 45 as well. It's I had problems with it like Jeff did. I think, you know, here's like Doug Liman. First off, Doug Liman's always like he's always had a special place in my heart because he was involved in the OC, directed episodes, and I think he was an executive producer on the show, which also explains why I always like whenever someone says Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the first thing that comes to my head is Adam Brody was in that movie.
Yeah, that's right. That's
how he got into that movie.
First spy.
Well, then he also casted Rachel Bilson in the next movie, May Jumper, and I felt like this kind of reminded me of Jumper a little bit in that, like, not from like any of the content, but just from it was like what I think one is the strengths of Doug Wyman. And I do think he misses in this territory, but like what he was able to do well with like the Bourne Identity, for example, is like, this is adapted material off of the Robert Ludlum Bourne Identity books. Right. So he's taking books and he's adapting them into a movie. And this is something he's done a few times during his career. When Jumper was adapted from a book, and then Edge of Tomorrow was adapted, I think, from a short story. And then Chaos Walking was adapted from a book series as well. And that did a very good job with the Bourne Identity and set the tone for that as well. And I thought he did a very, very good job with Edge of Tomorrow, which is one of my favorite sci-fi movies, even though I think
one of you awesome.
Doesn't love it as much as I love it. I think.
Oh, I love it.
Maybe everybody loves it. I think, you know, and this one, of course, was adapted from a book. And I go back to my point I made the last episode. Like, I forget what movie we talked about, which was adapted from a book as well. It was Cherry, right? Where it's like the book gets all this stuff. And especially when it's like the Chaos Walking is based off of the Knife of Never Letting Go, which is part of a Chaos Walking book series by mm-hmm. Patrick Ness. And so you got a whole book series and you got a book and you got a lot of stuff you want to get out in the movie. And the movie, like that's the double-edged knife with like adapting it. This kind of felt like unlike the Edge of Tomorrow, where like maybe that saw the benefit of being adapted from like the light novel format or whatever it was about like getting out what it needed to get out in the film and being like a very coherent movie. I felt like there's a lot of stuff they wanted to get out here. And I think in terms of like world building, they did a fine job, but it just, as a movie, it was a convoluted mess. And that's really like, I don't know, the biggest compliment I can say for like, it was cool. Like I thought parts were cool. And then the rest of it, you're just kind of left saying like, okay, this isn't like a particularly good movie. So
he did feel Kojima-ish to you, just the design of some things, at least based on Death Stranding.
Well, no, yeah, I mean, I think Kojima, I mean, you look at like Kojima works, and I don't know like how you describe it, like postmodernism or whatever Kojima does, but you know, Kojima hits on like kind of these, I mean, Death Stranding certainly was this like post-apocalyptic or post, it was more of an I mean, I don't know how to describe it. Yeah, like, I mean, there are elements of that reminded me of Kojima for sure. But then there are also elements of just like the general messiness of it that reminded me of Kojima too. So I guess like, yeah, that's pretty fair to say it's Kojima-ish in by like ways of creating like a cool world. Mm. But where Kojima kind of like, where Kojima is able to hit is like, even though it's convoluted and a lot of stuff he does is like obviously over the top. Like think back to like Troy Baker's performance in Death Stranding and then some of the villains like in Metal Gear Solid, where you got a guy, his name is like Vamp and he's a literal fucking vampire. Like Kojima at least has like a bigger thing that he's trying to get across throughout all the mess. And I think like, especially with like Metal Gear Solid 2, and then also Death Stranding with kind of the last year and like the, you know, what he was trying to say about connection and human connection and being interconnected and what it means from that standpoint. Like, I think some of that was like oddly visionary in terms of like the world he was envisioning in Death Stranding, kind of how people felt post pandemic. So I think there was a message there, and I'm not sure this movie like got that across. So like credit to Kojima in terms of like, I'm a big Kojima fan, but I think like he, you know, there's things you can say about Kojima that, you know, apply to this movie, but ultimately where Kojima wins out is typically he is able to deliver his point, even though the, you know, the way of getting there might not always be the smoothest way.
Yeah. I just think honestly, the biggest problem with this, and maybe that's where something, and I don't mean to continuously harp on this Kojima thing, but like Kojima has the benefit of being able to space out over an entire video game. Like this movie was trying to be, again, its own standalone movie, but also I feel like it was focusing so hard on trying to set itself up as a franchise. Like they introduced the Spackle alien and then like you're never really shown an alien again. And like, yeah. I get that part of that is like, yeah, there's going to be probably future conflict with them in the next subsequent movies or whatever. But like, you can't just make it all so many teases throughout this movie while the central conflict is so weak and just so nothing. And especially like, I just don't think that there was anything really going between the two leads. Between what was the guy? What was Tom Holland's character's name? I just watched this movie in a fucking theater. I can't even. Todd. Yeah. Boo to Todd, by the way. Bad name for an action hero. But Todd and Viola just didn't have like that sort of connection where I believed their friendship growing, or like the romantic connection that I guess they were building up that was probably going to flourish in the second movie. Like, just they did not focus enough on making this good for as its own movie. It was way too disjointed, like you were saying before, Jeff.
Yeah, they, and like, also keep in mind, this was something that was also in somewhat of a production hell, where I think, you know, the rights
were bought. Also very true, yeah.
The rights were bought to this, and I think it was like, I don't think, because I'm reading it right here, but it was 2011. I only say I think because I don't know what the source
is. Yeah, 2011 is when they, that's what I was referencing. What's his face? Charlie Kaufman was involved early on. But yeah, I mean, they started filming in 2017. So again, it's production hell is, which I, we, a very funny tweet today. I'll have to just read exactly word for word what it is, because it's, I don't want to rip it and take credit for it. I tweeted, I said, this is one of the craziest filmographies, and I showed Doug Liman's filmography. And then I retweeted somebody saying, fuck, where was it? I scroll back. Yeah, I said, what if I told you the same person directed every single one of these movies? I read the movies that I mentioned, and their reply was, he's almost never, this is Justin Drifter, 1770, said, he's almost never gotten through a project without some weird delay or production issue or budget inflation. So I'm really looking forward to his movie Shot in Space.
Yeah, that's true. That's like, a very good point.
That is like, that thing is going to have so many, like, based on just his history and nothing else, that's going to have so many issues. That's just so true.
But he does have Tom Cruise on his side, and if they're, Tom Cruise will fucking force anything through. So I think anything Doug Liman he's done, Tom Cruise will get the machine behind it.
Yeah, it's really, I mean the film, like Jeff said, it wrapped in 2017 with The Principal, and then they're going to do reshoots, but you know, Daisy Ridley was busy with the Rise of Skywalker. And Tom Holland was doing Spider-Man, and so they weren't able to get to them until 2019. And then, of course, the weird thing about this one is this would have been just the perfect thing to dump out on streaming. And I don't know if they kept it in the can because they wanted to do a heat check, or at least try to like see how people would come back to theaters. I can't imagine it's doing too well at the box office. I think one is that I haven't seen any promotion for it anywhere. You guys are in New York City, so I usually use you guys as a better barometer, because I go with like, what are they advertising on the side of the buses?
I walk past a massive, no less than 20 story tall advertisement of Cherry on the side of a building every single day. That's the biggest advertising I see.
Yeah, and so I mean, I don't know. I don't know if there's chaos walking advertising, but it being out, it was certainly something that felt like I did not need to be watching in theaters. But I think there are positive elements to it. Like I do like the way Doug Liman, like I do like the way his films look. I do kind of like his vision between The Edge of Tomorrow and this one, for like what he considers to be like a weird future, or whatever you want to consider it.
An odd future, some would say.
But you know, the point you're making is like, yeah, they were trying to set this one up to be a series, to be a franchise, just the same way the books are. And that's just where you got to walk that tightrope between knowing what you have and knowing what you can do, and like what the future looks like there, because your first job should be just making a good self-contained movie when it's the first in the series and it's not off of like a established property that people want to already see. Like, yeah, when you're making the Harry Potter movies, I get like, you're going to make the rest of them. Like you're going to get people in there, but something like this, like you get, people aren't going to come back. You're going to get the whole Divergent thing again, where like you got an existing property, but you didn't really nail it. And so nobody really wants to come back to see it. And so setting everything else up is like, even though you're going to make the movies, it's somewhat for naught, because it's just not a, it's either not a good adaptation or not a good individual film.
Yeah. It kind of sucks, because I do think that this in a better world could be done extremely well, because again, conceptually, I do like the concept, and I'm assuming that's what made the book so successful, or the books so successful, is like the idea of the noise and being able to do that successfully and to detach it from stuff like, you know, what women want or whatever. Like that could be really cool. Like that could be done really well. I don't think this was, and call it the curse production or whatever, it just didn't work. They didn't do it right.
Yeah, it just felt disjointed. You know what it felt like? it felt like it, this is how I knew I was back in the theaters. It felt like a movie that really, and you mentioned it, it felt like a movie pitching the tent for the tentpole franchise. Like, that's exactly what it felt like. It felt like one of those things you're like, this is just pitching me a product. Like, this is just pitching me the goods to like come back and watch more of this like slop. But in the, like, I know a lot of good movies do that we like, but this was one of the bad ones. And you're right. Like, Divergent's a good example. I'm just like, ugh. And the king of the pitching the tentpole is Fantastic Four from a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah.
That's the champion of that. But this is one of those ones where it's like, this is selling me the goods that I don't want.
Not the best example, but part of it's going to be interesting to see with the Dune movie coming out. I mean, I'm only making the comparison because it's a sci-fi franchise. Book. I mean, probably one of the sci-fi books in terms of like popularity, but it's a big book series. I mean, there's a lot to cover and it's not always so straightforward, at least from what I've read. And certainly, you know, the Lynch interpretation wasn't critically well received, and there's, you know, I have faith that this one will be better, but like, how do you, you know, the challenge in terms of doing those franchise things is how do you set the foundation with a good movie in and of itself while leaving some meat on the bone for the rest of it? I don't know. I'm not a filmmaker, but like, certainly like when I'm watching this movie, I'm just saying, okay, they're leaving meat on the bone, but it's just not like enough to even get you interested in the steak itself, I guess.
You got to strike a balance, man. I just don't think they found that balance. You got to tease the future to try and get people pumped up for a sequel, but you also need to make that individually great movie, or at least passable. And just this movie wasn't that.
Let's go back to Mads Mikkelsen though. I mean, he
wasted in this.
Well, you know, he's interesting because I never really get tired of him in the villain roles. And I honestly think he's one of those actors who legitimately does not care if he's typecast in American cinema. The vibe I get from him is that he just does not give a fuck about that sort of, you know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, you're
just reading interviews is like, you know, he's got his own projects. He's renowned in his home country. He's a cinematic legend there. But in terms of his views on American cinema, he kind of takes these roles and he does what's asked from him. And he's a really convincing bad guy. But at no point do I ever feel like he's like kind of left saying like, I wish I wasn't wasted. So like, I get what you're saying, but then part of me also says like, Mads Mikkelsen probably, if he really wanted to, could have a lot more. It's just that part of me thinks he likes doing this shit. Sometimes.
He gets some money. He likes doing Clash of the Titans or whatever. Make some American money, go back to Denmark and make some projects that he's actually passionate about.
make Oscar nominees. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And so, I mean, and he's like, he's wasted in the sense that like, I would love to just, I mean, I love seeing him leading the movie. Like we saw with Another Round. It's almost like, you know, you want to see more of Mads Mikkelsen because anytime he's on the screen, he's like interesting, or he's easily the most compelling person on that screen at that one time. It's like you're kind of sometimes operating in the shadow of Mads Mikkelsen because he's so magnetic in terms of his presence.
I mean, he legitimately has me looking forward kind of to Fantastic Beasts, the next one, which the franchise sucks ass. But I'm like, okay. Like, I'll go see that with a little interest because I like him so much. I also had somebody message me recently. I told Ken Jack this about Admiral Thrawn. They said they should definitely have Lads Mikkelsen reprise the role. Like, Lads Mikkelsen.
You fucking what, mate?
You just combine the name of both of them. Yeah.
He's I mean, and again, that was another reason why it's easy to, I don't know,
make that
Kojima connection in your head because he was so part of Death Stranding, but he also felt like, also, and part of it was maybe the marketing for Death Stranding, but it also felt like him, Hideo Kojima, and Norman Reedus were all like friends and really just liked doing it. Mm-hmm. And it kind of felt like Mads Mikkelsen liked doing it, where you're just like, okay, I'll wear this suit with the ping pong balls on it and do the mocap and then get to ham it up in front of the screen. And like my beautiful face is rendered full in 3D. And it's like, and to him, it's like, it's at least interesting. And that's the thing with him is like, I at least feel like even if the movie's not good, he's able to play interesting characters. So I know, like, kudos to him. And, you know, not to take anything away from like Tom Holland, Daisy Ridley. It's just, it's Mads Mikkelsen, you know?
Yeah. Victor, he kind of plays the same guy in most American movies. In a loop, Death Stranding and Kojima, back to Jeff, you know who had a role in Death Stranding? one of your favorite talk show hosts.
Conan,
that's Heck. Right, because he did the video game stuff, I know. He does all those
Video games. Yeah. He plays like a side quest character in Death Stranding. I think
I've seen that video, yeah. Or like, yeah, okay.
What's the guy's name, Trill, the bad guy? Not Death Mask. What the fuck is his name, Death Stranding? Die Hard Man?
Die Hard Man. He's not like the real bad guy, though. Well, he's
kind of. No, but his name is Die Hard Man.
Yeah, his name is Die Hard Man. The names in that.
Folks, they call that rigor mortis.
I mean, it's been a while since I played it. I think there was a character named Mama, and then I forget what the Troy Baker's bad guy was named, but he also had a real cool name too.
Possible not to love.
I mean, but part of that is like part of that's Kojima's genius, because it's just almost like this is like these characters. This is who they are. Like there's no pretense with giving them cool names like Xander. You know, Xander something, like, just, you know, real slick names. It's like, I'm just gonna Die Hard Man. I like Die Hard. It's a cool fucking name. This is the way just people are in the future, this dystopian future. Deal with it.
Die Hard Man.
My favorite Lars Mikkelsen episode of House of Cards is when he's the president of Russia, Viktor Petrov, and he goes and he talks with Frank. While he's talking, Claire and Kathy Underwood, Kathy Durant play beer pong.
I remember that episode and the one where they're stuck in a bunker together, right? Like in like not Iraq, like Syria or something.
I think they like, yeah.
Did
I think they're sexually attracted to each other. I'm not sure about that one.
Well, didn't he like keep like making advances towards Claire? When I'm trying to remember in the show, yes. If Claire was receptive of it or not. Yeah. Like,
nah, she was not.
Yeah, okay. I just remember him like, you know, that was kind of a weird angle they took in that show, but, you know, they took a lot of weird angles in that show. I'm not certain that's more specifically called.
And then the last season was shot in the same cinematic style as a Tim Burton movie.
I want to be the showrunner. Like, just imagine I'm the showrunner, right? And you guys are sitting down for the season two table read, and we're just like, okay, all right, Kate, your character gets pushed in front of the train. This is the first episode.
Yours is dead. I just flew all the way here from LA. I don't know why she's not in LA, but you get the point.
Guillermo del Toro to play Die Hard Man. He's going to replace Frank Underwood.
What? Reminder what we gave it. 25 for me, Ken Jack.
45.
Trill. 45 for me, too.
Yeah, audience 40, gave it a 48, which is very few scores. We don't have a lot of people going to the theaters. And I know some people are like, you're doing a theater movie. I might not listen to the review. They're going to be part of it now. AMC, 98% of AMCs are open next week, I think, or at the beginning of April. So
I don't think this movie was made better by watching it in IMAX.
No.
Which is what I did. I think I could have lived watching it in streaming.
Unlike Edge, to the streaming ones. However, when we have like right now this lull in the middle of the week, we will go to the theater ones. So
yeah, unlike Edge of Tomorrow, like I felt like Edge of Tomorrow was just more of a I'm gonna look up the production on that one too. Maybe not now, but like that was more. I mean, the sounds and the visuals, like that was something else. And I'm not saying like this movie's not horrible. It doesn't come close to that Edge of Tomorrow vibe. And I'm only drawing that comparison because it's, you know, sci-fi from the same director.
Bracket time, Drew.
Bracket time.
Oh, we're doing Justice League on Sunday. Everyone knew that already. So.
Okay. All right. All right, we're doing the best March Madness things, and I want you guys to fill out the last two picks. So I may take your pick. So be ready with like a couple thoughts off the top of your head, or we could just reuse them and just have the pick meet each other up in the bracket. Yeah. We pick whose version of that pick we like better.
Yeah.
So it's all right. So the first matchup is talking brackets with coworkers versus one shining moment.
Luther Vandross, man, hard to vote against him. I love that song. Got to go Luther Vandross.
Vandross?
Yeah, whatever.
I mean, you're the first person I've ever heard pronounce it Vandross.
Well, I'm not saying it Van, like his name is like a fucking Dutch supervillain.
Like a fancy
inflection to it. Yeah. I mean, I know Pot Kettle Black in terms of pronunciation. I just, you know.
Depends on the year. Sometimes CBS does a bizarre mix of some of like the best calls or the buzzer beaters. But when there's some years where one shining moment really hits a certain way, obviously when your team wins, it means a lot more.
Well, I put this in here as a trap because nobody should like talking brackets with coworkers.
Yeah, and that was my next thing is like I don't know. I didn't hate it here. It depends where you work, I think. But I guess we're not really talking bracket. We're talking picks here.
I mean, it depends on where you work, but also it's just like the level of banter you get at, where it's just like, oh man, how's your bracket doing?
Oh, okay. So you're talking more about in the moment.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, the whole process, like the March Madness becomes a thing in the office because it's so present during the day. In corporate America, March Madness is so in your face with games going on during designated work times. That's unavoidable.
By the way, to note, if you're a true LCB fan, make sure you're rooting for Morehead State, right?
Correct. Morehead State. Ken Jack and I. Morehead State is our team. If they make the Sweet 16, we can win a Bitcoin, which is
quite a bit of money,
worth tens of thousands of dollars. So,
really?
Yes. Yeah, so please root for Morehead State because we would love that. Actually, honestly, just win a game. You can do the math on that. Just win a game and put us in a position to guarantee ourselves some money. Just win a game, at least one Morehead State. Remember that time you beat Louisville? Okay. One shining moment. Talking bracket with coworkers, back in fifth grade, there was a kid who brought a bracket in after the weekend, and he clearly used whiteout to white out the games he had incorrectly predicted. I'll never
call him out on that.
He absolutely was called out. Yes.
Jeff was at the coal mines in fifth grade. Oh, God damn it. You son of a bitch, you whited it out.
True.
Okay. Let me pull up my notes app. All right. Next one is the, doesn't matter the company, but there's one year that there's a really repetitive ad. And yes. I remember one year is like the Buick, it started with the whisper. And then another year was the Napa know-how. The Napa know-how might be still going on, but it's the annoying ad that overarches the entire tournament versus going to Vegas for the tournament.
Repetitive ads for me because I've never been to Vegas for the tournament. I've been I was in Reno last time.
And that Tahoe. Doesn't count. It's not Vegas.
I like going to Vegas when it isn't like a overcrazed weekend. So yeah, I'm going to repetitive ad. I remember one time the Enterprise always has their commercials, but the one that I remember one year, Saturn had a commercial every break. And there's like, you know, people always ask us, where's Saturn? And he's like, we're still here. And then they were out of business the next year.
Yep. My goddamn view can't find any replacement parts for it. Real son of a bitch problem I got going.
Repetitive
on here,
ads. But I'm actually curious what the ad is. Oh, then there was that one guy who would always he was sitting at the desk. He was the guy who played in Veep. He played like the Veep version of Google, the Smarch. He was in the commercials for like 2 years ago. Yeah. Anyway, repetitive commercials. That's how you know it's March.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I gotta go repetitive commercials too. Plus, I like the Napa Know How jingle. It's just like it's Napa Know How, right?
And yeah, I like something that like too. That? I like the, and then but I'm going with Vegas because Vegas is fun during the tournament.
Oh, you know what has a good commercial right now?
Get a spot at Emeril Lagasse Stadium or whatever it's called now.
Emeril Lagasse Stadium. What's that?
You don't remember? You've never heard of Emeril Lagasse Stadium? It was a restaurant, sports bar venue that had stadium seating. I think it still exists. It's in the Venetian. I don't think it has the Emeril Lagasse branding anymore, but it was the pretty big sports bar type of deal.
So my favorite running commercial right now, by the way, is the Geico "Whoop There It Is" commercial where the parents start dancing in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's a great.
Yeah, everyone likes that commercial. That's one of the most well-liked commercials I've seen in a while.
That's like the first one. I think like every time it comes out, I'm like, yeah, like I'm like vibing along to it. I like that commercial. There's so many bad ones, but man, I love that. Whoop. There it is. Geico strikes again. Bring back. And now they're going to make a TV show out of that.
What? Just the tag team gets caveman.
What was the baby TV show they made out of the commercial, Trill?
Was it the E-Trade baby and the E-Trade baby get his own show?
Was it Baby Bob?
Yeah, maybe.
Bob came out in 2002. Yeah. Oh, I don't know if it was the E-Trade baby, but yeah, it was the talking baby.
Elliot Gould was in it. I want to go back.
Was he really?
Jesus. Holland Taylor. Oh, my God.
Imagine me getting a time machine and then like just a scientist, like, when are you going back to? And I just set the dial to 2002. I'm like, I'm not going to solve anything. I'm going to go watch some more celebrity death match on a gigantic cathode ray tube TV.
As I say, it has to be like the 5.5 foot tall by 5 feet wide, massive tube TV. It's going to stand. Oh,
okay. The last one of my selections is taking the first Thursday and Friday off of work to just fully watch the games and take them in. Versus finding out which channel True TV is.
I like that knowledge.
So interesting on both of these. So when I moved to Texas, spring break was always the week. So when I lived in Connecticut, you had a little break in February, a little break in April. But then in Texas, spring break was always the week of the tournament. Also, we also had teacher conferences always the 3 days after the Super Bowl. So it was like we just had sports holidays. It's like I didn't really take off school, but anyway. And then also, I used to buy the March Madness package on DirecTV, so you could watch all. Remember when you couldn't watch all the games? You only got the local games?
Yeah, I remember that.
Those were the fucking days. I like the True TV thing because Impractical Jokers, like I cannot wait to see the fucking bingo episode of Impractical Jokers after watching fucking the Syracuse and San Diego State or some bullshit on Saturday night.
I mean, the True TV knowledge.
It's toilet paper.
It's an unlock for you to go back and watch more True TV. I feel like you got to go with the True TV thing.
And then I know it's bad when the Carbonaro effect comes on, which might be a funny show, but I know that's when it's too late.
Yeah. No, I got to go with finding True TV as well. Just love those four lads from Staten Island. Just good pals. You know, Mer, Sal, and Q. All the
just
guys.
Good buddies, just good buddies.
Funny.
I don't, you know, I don't love taking the Thursday, Friday off work unless I'm going to Vegas, unless I have like something planned for it, because it's kind of fun to watch that stuff at work sometimes.
You like the thrill?
Well, you know, like sometimes it's on the break room, and then you and your coworkers who you love discussing the brackets with get together in the break room to watch the final shot of like UTEP and the Kansas or whatever. I don't know.
Yep.
The final shot goes up. UTEP makes it 82-59. Kansas wins. They will move on. Okay. So Jeff, what's your nominee?
I'm gonna let Ken Jack go first. I think him and I are gonna have the same exact one, but that's more of his bit than mine. So I'm gonna let him take it.
I don't even know what it is now.
Oh, okay, come on. We just talked about it the other day.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Then I know what it is. It's the guy that comes up to you and says, like, yeah, my bracket's doing bad, the one that I'm in with you, but the one I'm in with other people is doing really good.
Yes. Guy who always has a better bracket.
Yeah.
Insecure bracket guy.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Insecure bracket guy is great. Yes. Great qualifier for that.
Yes. Insecure. Yes.
I don't want people to know that I'm not very good at knowing sports.
Pick the favorites this year. It has to work sometime.
Yep, insecure like bracket guy. And then I'm going to go with guy who loves the underdogs. Guy who always, and like I've been guilty of this my whole life, a guy who always, like you would think he went to fucking, the example is here, UC Santa Barbara or Winthrop. He's like, oh, dude, you haven't seen the Gauchos? You haven't stayed up until 11 p.m. to watch their games all year long? You haven't seen the Gauchos? Easiest 12 seed of all time. It's a lock. Easy.
I like that, but I like the insecure bracket guy.
I prefer that one as well.
I just love the insecurity that radiates off of someone when they're not doing well in their bracket, and they feel like they need to prove something.
I will say this.
Describing insecure bracket guy before than your fifth grade class.
I'm going to give this is only half credit to our good friend Darren Ravel. He's said for a while he's enjoyed the tournament more since he stopped filling out a bracket. I think that's asinine. Fill out a fucking bracket. It takes 2 minutes. It's fun to follow. If it stinks, whatever. I did stop caring about my bracket after a while. Like, I stopped being like, God damn it, got that wrong. Rooting for upsets, though also I do gamble on basketball now, so it's a whole different fucking, it's stupid, but Barstool Sportsbook app, if you're in Michigan, if you're in Illinois, et cetera, Pennsylvania. There was a point where I was like, I'm just going to stop being mad about my bracket, because watching underdogs, watching these mid-majors win on buzzer beaters and shit, it's just so much more fun when you can enjoy them. They're so much more enjoyable. Like, if you had Virginia winning it all and you weren't able to enjoy UMBC, like a 16 finally beating a 1, like, that's kind of a bummer. Like, I'd rather embrace watching that happen. So my two cents on filling out brackets. That's it.
I like filling out brackets. It's not so much for when I'm liking the games. I just like the fun mental exercise when I'm in the moment.
Right.
Like a crossword puzzle of sorts.
Clicking that mark, filling it out. Do you do paper or do you do it on the, like, whatever, Yahoo or ESPN?
I don't do paper anymore. But I do.
That's my favorite. I'm that guy.
I know, Jeff. You didn't even have to show me.
Love it.
Trust me. I know you're a paper bracket guy.
I will say more than ever though this year that I run to print out a bracket. So I was like, God, I need that normalcy after not having it last year. Like that was just it was a comforting feeling.
I started doing the New York Times crosswords and they're pretty fun Monday through Wednesday. And then they just get aggravating Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then the Sunday one's too long. I don't even do it. It's too big. But you can do it. It just, you know, the thing is like, once you learn how to do a crossword, it gets a lot easier. There's a method to it, which I'm sure crossword doers are like, yeah, no shit, dumbass. But as someone new to the elite high level crossword of the New York Times, I'm still learning the ropes.
I figured out there's an algorithm to solving Rubik's cubes. Yeah, no shit, dude.
Okay, let's go back to the top of the bracket. And the second round matchup will be One Shining Moment versus the Buick Napa ads. I mean, you gotta go One Shining Moment, right?
About repetitive ads. Some years One Shining Moment, it doesn't work. It's not well put together. There was that one year they had Jennifer Hudson singing it. No offense, yeah. She's a great singer. The consistency, every year you're gonna get repetitive ads. Some years they're not going to get great calls. There might not be a lot of buzzer beaters or storylines. I think consistency and repetitive ads.
Yeah, I agree. Got to pick Luther Vandross Geller. Got to pick him. There's just no situation. I'm sorry, Jeff. I just no situation. I'm not going to pick him.
Luther Vandross Geller.
I think the fact that Luther Vandross has passed away, like it should make it an easier decision to say we should never have anyone else do the One Shining Moment. It's like, Luther Vandross, in terms of his accomplishments, One Shining Moment should be very far down the list, but it is something a lot of people recognize. And I do think it's part of his greater legacy, and I don't want to see anyone else do it. Like you said, no offense to Jennifer Hudson, love her, but like Luther Vandross, that's his.
They're going to have like Ed Sheeran do it eventually.
Baby, One Shining Moment. I told her I didn't go to college. I'm just a singer with a little bit of knowledge. One shining moment. Now I've done the rap part of my song. Now it's time to sing on my song. Baby, your body smells so good.
That's a hit song. Baby, your body smells so good.
That was an incredibly awesome, very short 15-second breakdown of Ed Sheeran songs, by the way.
When we're on the dance floor, you know I want more. Now it's time for me to sing. Baby, I love the way you smell.
I love the way the word smell.
I love the way you stink.
That's one of your most astute breakdowns I've ever heard you make in the show in 342 episodes. Okay.
You stink so good.
Anyway. All right. Okay.
All right. So wait, One Shining Moment one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Finals is finding out which channel True TV is on versus the Insecure Bracket Man guy.
I got to go. Whoever it is. Insecure Bracket Person.
Insecure Bracket Person
will also do the thing like, dude, you see the bracket my dog filled out. Bro. And my dog.
My girlfriend doesn't even watch college basketball. She made a perfect graphic.
Yo, my 6-year-old filled out the bracket based on mascots. Look at this.
I knew I should, you know what? Like, I knew I should have picked University of Texas El Paso there. But, I mean, their points per game versus their points allowed per game. Like, just the metrics lined up for them. Dude, they're playing UNC.
I never picked Duke, bro.
The one thing is I will never pick Gonzaga to win because I don't think it's possible.
Oh, me neither. I've never had them anywhere past, I think, but the Final Four.
I used to think that about modern era Villanova because Gonzaga and Villanova, like almost my entire lifetime up until when Villanova actually won, were always the teams that would be like they're going to win it this year. And then they never, you know, would. So I'm like, okay, it's Gonzaga, Villanova. They're always the one. And Nova obviously is a powerhouse. So, you know, stranger things have happened. Maybe Gonzaga wins, but I'm never to that point where I'm ready until I see it happen. I'm ready to pick Gonzaga to go all the way.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we'll have an experience cooler than the Chris Jenkins shot anytime in the near future. I was thinking about that before. That's going to be tough to beat.
What, the UNC draining it and then Villanova coming back and draining it? And
that was the title on at the buzzer.
That was the moment the crying Jordan meme died, because all that happened right in front of Michael Jordan's face. And therefore, like, it just broke the crying Jordan meme. It
broke the loop. Although crying Villanova girl, when that was, that had to be like what I could.
Piccolo girl. Now. No, yeah. God, no. Piccolo girl was the year before they won. It was against NC State.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Wow. I felt so much. I remember doing that meme about that in like my three apartments ago apartment. Wow. Only that short ago. Wow.
All right. So we got.
Hey, well, look at this. We just want to do a quick update. Lot of rumors about the Celtics and Brad Stevens down 20 to the Cavs in the first half right now. Is Brad Stevens distracted?
You got to think that he was like on Zillow earlier today looking for property in Bloomington, and that he just was thinking about the primo real estate he could get on Lake Monroe living right next to Jesse Eisenberg.
Neighbors with Jesse Eisenberg and the what do you call it? Because he is the booster that bought out Miller, right?
No, there's no way Jesse Eisenberg, like, there's no way Jesse Eisenberg has ever heard of Archie Miller or Brad Stevens.
He's an IU Hoops
fan. Your guy, man. I could see it. He is a massive IU Hoops fan. I could totally see him being that guy.
I know. But I don't think that guy. I personally, my own theory is that guy is Ken Nunn, which if you're an IU alum, he's a local lawyer who is quite visible in advertising and also drives like a Rolls Royce around campus and stuff.
He's
and
the Celino End Barnes of Indiana.
I don't know what that means.
Exactly.
I don't know. I think you need to get back on Twitter and join Mark Titus. Mark Titus is pulling the sled for Brad Stevens to Indiana harder than anyone has ever pulled the sled.
I mean,
bat signal is there for you.
He's just manifesting it. the other thing is, you know, what if the booster was Cuban? Could have been Cuban.
Yeah.
With $10 million a Cuban. Although I've never seen Cuban be active in caring about IU basketball.
Mm.
That active. Could
be intriguing.
I don't know.
He's got the money to spend.
Well, yeah. Yeah, he does. But I also feel like he keeps a distance from it just because of his position as a professional sports owner or whatever. But also at the same time, he might not give a shit. So I don't know why I'm even saying that.
I don't know. That'd be cool though.
Okay, so we go back up. Is it the final matchup now?
Yep.
Is it One Shining Moment versus the Insecure Bracket Guy?
Oh, this is hard. This is hard.
No, One Shining Moment. You gotta go One Shining Moment. Everybody loves One Shining Moment. It caps off the tournament. It makes you appreciative of the things that have just happened. It makes you wistful for the fact that the tournament's over. And I think this year it's going to be a little extra emotional because we just didn't have a tournament last year, and it'd be nice to have it back. Although, you know, certainly hope the safety precautions and all that stuff are being followed.
Okay. But to Jeff's point, it doesn't always hit. Insecure Bracket Guy always hits. There's not a year where Insecure Bracket Guy isn't there ringing the fucking bell.
If the Jim Nance call is wonky, like one year he got so fucking frazzled by Gordon Hayward's shot, he was like, Duke wins, the king of the dance. That's such a bad call to end One Shining Moment on. If the Jim Nance call stinks, One Shining Moment is almost completely ruined. Insecure Bracket Guy without fail is there every year.
When did Jim Nance start giving out his tie, like trying to make that?
That's one of the fucking stupidest things of all time.
Weirdest tradition. Such a weirdo, dude.
Would you like my tie?
Want me to tie you up, sir?
Well, I've been drinking and I'm so high. I feel like I'm wearing Jim Nance's tie.
That's the crossover everyone has always wanted. Ed Sheeran, Jim Nance.
Wearing Jim Nance's tie.
This kush got me feeling like Jim Nance's tie.
Girl, You got me tied up like Jim Nance. Upon the dance floor, we will dance. Girl, I love the way you stink.
Why say stink? No, that's beautiful. No, I'll actually want, I'm going to help you write that song now.
Because it just feels like, it feels like an Ed Sheeran song. It's like
I love on the way the shape, you stink.
Yeah, the shape of you. It's like
the stink of
you. I love the shape of your body.
The stink of except, you would go quadruple platinum.
An album of Ed Sheeran covers sung by like the Gallagher of Oasis who sings. I forget which one that is.
Yeah. It's Liam or Noel.
Well, yeah, that those are the two Gallagher brothers. You're correct.
Just letting you know.
We've narrowed it down.
I'm in love with the stink of you. Gonna have to write that. Gonna have to write that one later. All right, let's wrap it.
Don't need no French perfumes.
All right.
Moment. Ed Sheeran wins the bracket.
Snyder cut. Good luck to your brackets and to all your teams. Go UConn. Thank you.
Morehead State. Vote root for Morehead
also
State.
Also Morehead State, please. Please.
Please. All of you. We're all LCB fans are Morehead State fans until further notice. We're weaponizing you. Morehead State.
Everyone, if you're listening to this pod still, you haven't turned it off yet, tweet something Morehead State related at LCB.
Yes.
Tag us. Okay, that's it. Justice League, the Snyder Cut on Sunday for Ken, Jeff, and Trump. Jeff Lowe, we'll talk to you next time.